Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
Yep, the first is the Hydra, which takes place on April 20th and has a 50K individual, a 50K relay, and a half marathon option. Whatever option you choose, we promise that slaying the Hydra will be unlike any race that you've ever experienced.
And the second is the Final Countdown, which takes place on September 14th. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we will be there with you to help celebrate.
All right, so mark your calendars, share with your friends, and visit us at our website, theultrarunningguys.com, or check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode, and remember, when in doubt, just show up.
I stopped and I realized if I stop again, I might not be able to get going again because it was just that much pain. And so it was painful when I was running, but when I would stop and start again, that's when it was kind of crazy. So I looked at Chris and I was like, buddy, you got to buckle up because I'm not going to be able to stop the rest of the way. And if I do stop, I'm not going to be able to finish this thing.
And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And if it's your first time, welcome. Thank you for taking the time. And if you find the value, tell your friends, share, hit the like button, all that good stuff. And if you're back and you've been here before, your family, we love you. We appreciate you. We're going to get right into the guest. So our guest tonight also calls North Carolina home, and after seemingly coming out of nowhere, has made quite the impression over the past 15 months. After taking first place in the 2022 Halloween Hobble 6-hour with 36 miles, he went on to run his first 100 in March of 2023, claiming second place at Blackbeard's Revenge with a smoking fast 16 hours and 17 minutes. He then proceeded to take the win at the URI 100 miler in October of 2023, becoming one of only six people to ever finish the race in under 24 hours, but not before knocking out a 2:44 marathon in July during the buildup. He is the host of the Casually Ambitious podcast and the coach behind the Casually Ambitious Performance Club, and we can't wait to hear how he will be tackling 2024, which as of now consists of the Badwater Cape Fear 51 miler, the Boston Marathon, and the Hellbender 100, three very different races all taking place between now and the end of May. So stick around to hear his story, how he does it, and what tips he has for building speed, strength, and endurance. And with that, Chase Price, welcome to the show, man.
Wow. Wow. What an intro. I mean, you even got the Halloween hobble in there. That's impressive. I forgot about that one.
Drew Coombs is our friend, right?
Yeah. So Drew is a friend of ours, and he's actually been on the show when we did Last Man Standing cover, and we both run Halloween hobble, and it was okay. Incredibly muddy. So it holds a special place in our heart. But dude, like I said, 15 months, it's a short period of time for a resume like that. So there's a lot we want to talk about and a lot we want to pick your brain about. I think really the first question is, okay, you said in the email, and we just talked essentially 2 years. What were you doing before 2 years ago that helped set you up for where you are now?
Great question. I was casually running, and maybe that's what prompted me to start the Casually Ambitious Performance Club after that. But no, I was kind of a COVID runner, cliche as it sounds, one of those people that got into it during COVID. But I've always had a strong fitness passion, strong fitness base. I mean, I've been lifting weights since I was 14, 15 years old at the YMCA in high school, taking Jack's 3D back in the day. If you guys remember that pre-workout that's now banned, all that good stuff. And then, you know, I was like everybody else who starts running. I hated it because I didn't know how to do it. I would run hard for 2-3 miles and be sucking wind, be like, wow, that was awful. Don't want to do that again. And during COVID, kind of started to progress that a little bit, go an extra mile, get a little bit faster, developed a little bit of a passion for it, started signing up for some half marathons here and there along the way, and then pulled the trigger on 100 My buddy and I were like, hey, let's do something crazy. We were first talking about doing one that was unsupported, which we quickly realized was not a good idea for our first try. So we found one local to North Carolina, and that was Blackbeard's Revenge. And that kind of started the whole thing.
When you ran Halloween Hobble, was it your first ultra and then decided to do 100, or did you use Halloween Hobble as a training run for Blackbeards?
Yeah, Halloween Hobble was a training run for Blackbeards. So Blackbeards, I ran Blackbeards in March of 2023. So last year of 2023, I signed up for it in April of 2022. And I think I started training pretty much that month. So I trained for like 10, 11 months for that. Hadn't run a marathon before. So I used Halloween Hobble as my first ultra. Ran that before I had run a marathon. So ran an ultra before I ran any marathon. And then I used Charlotte Marathon and Kiowa Marathon as training runs going into Blackbeard.
And so I actually want to touch on that. And this is interesting because I want to get pretty tactical with you, because if I'm sitting at home listening or running listening, I'm thinking, okay, you're saying, hey, I was a gym guy. I start running in 2020 and then I've just heard this list of accomplishments, right? So it's one of two things. Either there was a foundation there, and we're going to kind of talk about between the gym and the types of workout you were doing, or you're a guy that digs in and really got tactical about what you were doing. And if that's the case, like, that's where we want to get some of this value, right? But some additional background, you mentioned the two other marathons that you did. So I said in the intro that in July of 2023, you ran a 244 marathon. But the year prior, so November of 22, you ran a 313. A month later, you ran a 308. So you're already seeing, one, you're already pretty quick by most people's standards, and then you were seeing this improvement. What changed besides the fact that you just did it more? Let's talk through some things like, what did you start doing? What did you stop doing? How did you become a better runner?
Yeah, so it's kind of a tale of two different types of running, two different races, right? The 244 was totally different because I spent 3 months actually dialed in training for a marathon, whereas for the 100, I was using these other marathons as training runs leading up to it. But what really clicked and what changed for me was when I signed up for the 100, I wanted to do the damn thing. And so I was like, you know what? If I'm signing up for this, I don't want to just finish the race. I want to compete. And so I was like, let me get a coach from the jump. And I'm somebody, as you can probably tell, I go all in. If I'm committing to something, I'm going all in on it. So hired a coach right from the jump, which was the best decision I could have possibly made. Cut years off my learning curve. Prior to that, I was training stupid, right? I would go out and run 20 miles and not take, you know, any hydration with me. And I'm like, I'm making myself tougher for like when I do have the water and all this. Like, you don't know what you don't know when you get started. So I was training stupid until I hired my coach. And then I had that 10-month period where the magic started happening. I started to see the results and I started to fall in love with the process of the training and everything. And I was like, this is who I am. This is who I want to be. And I kind of learned more about myself and who I wanted to become in that process. So there was a flip that kind of switched during that time. And I just developed a love and a passion for it.
Just out of curiosity, so when you hired a coach and you were 10 months out of the race, your coach, I'm assuming, probably sat down, did some sort of video assessment with you, kind of talked about your goal plans. Was it a local coach or was it a...
Yeah, I'm fortunate to have my coach here in Charlotte. Her name's Casey Klein. She's a marathon runner and ultra runner as well. She's a beast.
So when you met with her then and you told her what you were thinking and you told her you had zero experience, right, running ultras, and you explained to her that you didn't just want to go finish the 100, but you wanted to compete. What did she say?
You know, she didn't shoot me down. I don't think she thought that it was possible, but she didn't let me know that at that time. I never flat out said I was going to win the thing. I always said I was going to compete. I wanted to place top five for my first ultra was my goal. And she never really batted an eye at that. And that's how I knew I had the right coach, because she believed in me. And soon enough, she realized I was about it and that I was going to give everything I had to it. But early on, I don't know. I'd never have asked her that, but she probably thought I was a little bit crazy for sure.
She had to have looked at your running background, and you'd already explained you didn't really like running much. And so she's trying to figure out how she's going to take you to this point all the way to that point. Like, that's a lot of work. The good news is you gave her a good ramp. I mean, so you gave her plenty of time to get you there, but you had to have had some personal athletic background to kind of like that foundation has to be there for her to kind of take you to that spot, which kudos to her. She's a fantastic coach.
Yeah. Yeah, she is a fantastic coach. Had a couple of halves. Again, that was a pretty much the extent of the experience at that time.
So we've talked about coaches several times on the show. To hear you say that, obviously, somebody who wants to do something big, you jump right in, says one of the best decisions. So if you're listening, the message can, you know, kind of be the same, that if you can find a coach that works well for you, mm-hmm. it's recommended, but not everybody's going to do that. One thing I imagine about you, though, if you're going to work with the coach, sometimes the challenge is listening to the coach, right? You know, we can all find ourselves. It sounds like you did that well. So you said you were doing it stupid. You get with her. What did she change for you? Like when you started seeing her planning, what were you like, oh my gosh, this is what I got to do? Or did it feel good from the start? Like talk about the tactical stuff. Like what made the differences for you?
Yeah. Yeah. There was so much, man. It was so different from what I was doing because I was just going out and basically destroying myself. It wasn't like I was running a ton of miles, but again, I wasn't fueling. I didn't have any knowledge on fueling. I didn't have any knowledge on hydrating. I didn't know what vests I should wear or any of this stuff, what shoes I should be wearing. And so the learning curve just got cut in half basically because she was an open book and I was just asking all the questions all the time. And the structure, I mean, essentially the structure was obviously the most important part, but the idea of a slow progressive overload. And that's how I work with my clients now is like the build, 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 deload, build, 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 deload kind of structure just did, you know, wonders for me to create a little bit of structure there. And so we would lean really heavily on the back-to-back Saturday, Sunday long runs leading up to the 100 as the big training thing. But even prior to the 100, I did, we slowly progressed again, like going back to that runway I had, I did a 30 miler and then I did the Halloween hobble, which was 36. And then I did a 40 miler and then I did a 50 miler and all this practice leading up. So it was just, my confidence was just building, building, building. So she was helping me build my confidence as well as my fitness during that time with the structure she provided.
Just curiosity for me, because I've had a lot of luck with back-to-back long runs as well, but people have done it different. And I've seen, do you tend to split mileage evenly? Do you tend to do a longer on the first day and a little bit shorter on the second day or the opposite? What works well for you?
Yeah, I didn't do too much experimentation. We primarily would do 20 to 30 miler on Saturday and then something a little bit shorter, 20 to 25 on Sunday. So that back-to-back kind of replicating and being able to run on tired legs. And that worked really well.
So were you running based off mileage or based off time? In other words, did she say you're going to go run for 4 hours today and 3 hours the next day? Or did she say you're going to do 20 miles and whatever, 15 or whatever ends up being?
A little bit of both, but primarily mileage. I always went off mileage, not really off time, which might be a little unique, but I never really thought twice about it because I didn't know any better. I know some people now that I work with and that I coach prefer me to do like, they're just like something about it mentally. I'd rather do like time rather than mileage. I get it, but that never, I didn't really know any better. So I didn't think twice about it at the time. So typically it was always mileage.
There is no right or wrong. It can be either one. Yeah. And it's actually good to vary it up for people that get locked in on a preference. And so if they prefer it to be time, then throw them miles for kicks. You know, mm-hmm. it's good to vary it up for them. So
also just out of curiosity, and if you're listening, it's not that I'm saying go do what Chase did, right? But insight into how you go from not really running to a sub 17 hour, right? I would have to imagine there was speed built in. Like what would a week of running, like if you kind of just said, this was what an average look like for me?
Yeah. So it's hard going back now and trying to recollect because I'm in a block now. I mean, I've been in a block almost, I don't want to say nonstop. There's been a couple months in between, but I'm always in a block or about to be in a block. So I have to go back about a year and think about what I was doing. But I think we were probably touching on, at the very most, I think we touched 100 mile week leading up to it, a couple 100 mile weeks, maybe one or two. So it wasn't like I was doing crazy, crazy, crazy volume. I mean, there was certainly volume there. But the closer we got, we did a little bit more speed work. And that's something that I try to implement with a lot of my clients as well now too, because I saw the benefits of adding speed work with the ultra training, which was doing a track workout once a week, adding some paces into the long runs just to switch it up and provide a little bit of fire under that ass when you're getting in those longer runs and like just kind of kick it up a notch. And, you know, it's hard when you're out there going for 4 or 5 hours at the same pace. And so to provide a challenge like that sometimes is really good.
So it's interesting because a lot of the things you've said, you've actually referred back subtly to two other concepts. You referred to deload a little bit, and you referred to the fact that when you first started, you would just kind of go, I'll say it this way, balls to the wall when you were running as hard as you possibly could. Mm-hmm. And you were kind of crushing yourself. And then you said, until you learn more about hydration and nutrition, it almost feels to me that the secrets, if you will, to success may have been learning how to recover, learning how to fuel and hydrate yourself.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. That was another thing I haven't even touched on, but the recovery aspect. And I think about recovery, the golden rule for recovery is 50-50, right? Well, we're normal people. We have jobs. We're not going to be able to do 50-50 because we're not professional athletes. But to strive and try to do as much recovery as we can towards that 50% training, 50% recovery golden ratio is what I try to do and what I've always tried to do. So once I got going and I started ramping up the mileage, I'm like, okay, cool. Let me go get the compression boots. Let me go get the Theragun. Let me do some of these other things. Let me get the little ice cubes for the ice bath and all this stuff that I know. The biggest thing is like longevity and making sure week in and week out as the volume goes up that you're able to take it on essentially. And I realized that in that journey. And again, I think that goes up back to the ramp and the progression of month to month and having a long runway there that allowed me to do that, but also the insight into the recovery too, which was so key.
Such good info. I think a lot of people, we've talked about it several times, I think it's so easy to undervalue recovery, right? And sometimes it's more pain, more gain, but if you miss on that recovery, then the pain becomes too much too quick. So I'm curious about this, man, because I'm torn. I thought I had a guest coming in, but people tend to be either goal-oriented or process-oriented and tend to kind of gravitate to one or the other. What are you? Like, what, when you wake up in the morning, what drives you? Is it like, yeah, I love the day-to-day, or is it, man, when I get on that start line?
Great question. I need the goal. I need the flag in the ground at the end because that's what I use as my motivation through the process. I love the process as well. I love the day-to-day grind. I had a horrible run today, a horrible run this morning, 11 miles. Every second of it sucked. But it was one of those days that you're like, this is just, I'm going to add this to the bank. Like, you know, this is one of those days. I'm going to throw this run out essentially, but I know like this is the work that has to be done. There's no compromise. It's non-negotiable, right? So we all have those days. But I love the process and knowing like, okay, I got to go out and get, you know, 82 miles this week. Next week, I'm looking at 84, 85 miles or whatever it is. Ultimately, it's the flag in the ground and working towards that. But I need both to be able to say, okay, there's the flag. Let's reverse engineer and figure out how the work's going to fall into place from there. And then figure out the structure and the process. So that was not a good answer, but kind of both.
I mean, I think it's a great answer. And that's where I started to shift when I was talking to you, because I came in thinking, oh, you're probably a process guy. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I just love doing this every day. I tend to be, which I wish I could change about myself, I tend to be a goal, right? Mm-hmm. I have that thing that I'm working towards, to your point, even sometimes to where I'm like, oh, I'm not looking forward to this today, but I'm going to do it because at the end, this thing is waiting for me. I'm jealous of the people that are just like, I just love it. I just love getting up and doing this every day, and I could never race and be just fine.
Yeah, I have those days too. And I think the other thing why it's important to have both is because if you only have the goal and you're only goal oriented, you hit the goal. And then on the other side, you're like, well, what is next? Like, you get post-race day blues, which I've had before. And I'm sitting there, you're beat up after the 100 and you're like, that was incredible. That was one of the best days of my life. I can't really move now. And then that high fades and you're like, oh man, what am I going to do now? You know what I mean? So I think we've all kind of been there a little bit after the race, but it just goes back to process. And maybe you have something else on the calendar, maybe you don't, but you're like, all right, I'm going to figure it out from here and start putting the pieces back together.
So over the process of all your training that you've been doing, and I'm a process person just in, but not process from the fact I want to accomplish a goal so much as I just like to run. But for you, getting into the sport and kind of learning a ton over the past few years through it all, how do you think you've changed mentally?
I become a grittier person, I would say. That's my favorite characteristic of myself and of one that I look up to in other people is just grit and determination. And I think being an endurance athlete lends itself to so many other capacities of life. You know, if you can go out and knock an 11, 12 miler out first thing before the sun comes up, the rest of your day is going to be easy. And so when you're training for 100 mile races and you're going through these blocks and you're hitting 80, 90, 100 mile weeks, everything else in life tends to be less pressure because you're already doing the hardest thing that there is, or one of the hardest things that there is in this training. And it's almost like a part-time or full-time job for some people. So I think I've become a grittier person. I've become much more patient. You know, as those slow logging miles go, those 5, 6, 7 hour runs, you know, in training and things like that, knowing every Saturday morning for about 3 hours, I am booked up. Just having that on the calendar, I become more patient and hopefully a little bit more gritty in the process.
So I actually love the answer a lot. So one of the things that I've talked to other people about, not only that I kind of work with as runners, but just even on the podcast, we've talked to people, is the idea that it's important to stay engaged in your training, because that is actually where you refine your mentality of how you will perform on race day. Because if you look at your training and you're like, well, I'm going to take today off because I just don't feel it today, or I blow this run off halfway through and we use the excuse, it was just a bad day. You can have a bad day physically, but every day becomes a bad day if you constantly kind of look down on it, right? And so how you frame that, your training really will begin to show up on race day as well. So I think you practice your mindset in training more so than anything else. So I actually think you have a fantastic answer there.
Yeah, I'm curious. So how do you, because a lot of people will go, well, I just wasn't born that way. Like I don't really have the grit. I struggle when things get hard. But I think we would all agree here that it's a skill set you can develop, right? So if you're either working with your athletes or somebody's listening is like, man, wish I had that. Any advice or tips for continuing to build that or develop it?
One thing that I've taken with me through my training is like, if it's on the block, it's on the block. It's not a, I feel like doing it. It's non-negotiable. It's you're doing it. Now, granted, if you get sick or whatever, take the day off, like rest, recover, get right. Because we're playing a long-term game, not a short-term game. So we want to think in that sense. But if it's on my block and I have the miles, I'm getting the miles done. And that's what I expect of my athletes as well. So I think that in and of itself is a huge, huge benefit to developing grit and realizing this is not something I can compromise on or negotiate with. This is just something I have to get done.
Do hard things.
Well, yeah, you don't have to be born with it. You just have to practice it.
Yeah.
Then you develop 100%. It.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
100%. And you'll start to see it in your daily life too. And in the way you go about your work and the way you treat your family and your relationships and everything else, it kind of swells into the other capacities in your life too, which is cool.
Our motto for the show is just show up. And there's a story behind it and all that. And we won't go into it, but it's just that, right? Like, oh, I don't want to. Hey, just show up. Just put the shoes on, walk out the door. Right. Like do the thing. And that's it. That path always leads to some form of success, whether the goal was met or not. Right. But you move at least towards who you want to be.
Yep. Get the W.
So you mentioned you do a crap ton of running now. And yet if I troll you and look at your social media, I see you in the gym all the time. How do you balance both?
It's maybe a little bit easier for me because I have that strength background from the jump and I've been doing it for 15 years. So a lot of runners will be intimidated by the gym because they've been running for 15 years, but then they're like, their coach is like, hey, you should start strength training. And they're like, oh shit, I'd never done that before in my life. I don't know what to do in there. So I guess I have an advantage in that sense of that's my base, but I love strength training, man. I love slinging some weight in the gym and throwing some weights around and the camaraderie that comes with the gym too. I love running as well, don't get me wrong, but that's more, they're totally different mindsets for me. One's like lone wolf mentality out there getting the miles, and the other one is more like camaraderie, like I don't want to say like bro lifting, but you know what I mean. It's just kind of that buddy mentality in the gym where I go lift with my buddies and things like that. So I just love the strength training side of it. It's hard to get high mileage and still get 4 to 5 strength training sessions a week. If I get really, really busy, I said the miles are non-negotiable. The strength training will tail off from time to time, but I'm still getting in there, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, usually at the least. So it's just part of the process. I love it. And I think it makes me a much stronger runner. So I'm going to continue to do that.
I want to dig into that just a little bit. So I come from, I was definitely in the gym. I hated running You know, so very similar background, even though I probably wasn't as diverse in the gym as you were. We've had a couple guests, Charlotte Curtis, Mark Bottenhorn, come to mind that have a really big strength background, and their running showed it. So you personally, how important do you think your strength training has been to your development as a runner?
I think it's been pretty huge. I think it's been pretty big, especially when it comes to injury prevention. I mean, that's the name of the game, and in being able to kind of try and come on the scene quickly is like, if you're always injured, you're not going to be able to, one, toe the line, and two, perform probably how you want to perform. So don't get me wrong, I've had my fair share of bumps and bruises along the way. I've dealt with some plantar fasciitis and some Achilles tendonitis and like some of these common things we all deal with, but I've attacked them through my recovery and, you know, finding a good PT and getting hooked up with somebody like that. But also I think a lot of the strength training, and I'm somebody who doesn't do a lot of machine work. I believe in like free weight training and stuff because it's all your stabilizing muscles, and it's working all these micro muscles that are conducive to becoming a better runner as well. So I focus a lot on that. And I think ultimately it's the longevity game is kind of how I think about it. Is it going to make me faster? Probably not, but it definitely could keep me in the game longer.
So just one follow-up question for listeners who aren't as comfortable in the gym, if you will, right? How do you program your strength workout for your legs? I saw, I think it was today or the other day, you posted some, you know, leg workout where you talked about the fact that, you know, if you program your own leg workout, then you get to be as mean as you want to be yourself, right? And so something to that effect. And I use those words loosely because I have no idea exactly how you said it, but you know what I'm referring to, I bet.
Sure. Yes, yeah. I do.
So how did you, yesterday, right? So how do you program an intense, heavy leg session in the middle of your running when most of us runners who aren't used to being in the gym are terrified of destroying our legs before we have a long run the next day or even 2 days?
A lot comes down to scheduling it into your week where it's not going to destroy your hard run. So typically how I'll work out a block is like Monday, Tuesday, easy runs, Wednesday, hard speed run, Thursday, easy run, Friday, easy run, Saturday, long run with paces, Sunday, rest or very easy recovery run. So I will try and do my heavy leg day on Mondays so that I give myself the most amount of time to be able to recover for Wednesdays and Saturdays. Those are the most important ones. Those are where we're going to level up the most. So I want to be the freshest that I can during those. So I'll do them either on Sunday or Monday. But I think just being strategic about your scheduling and, again, not training stupid or training dumb and saying, all right, it's Tuesday night. I got a big workout tomorrow. Let me go try and squat 315 just to see if I can. It's also a fact of like, yeah, I like to lift heavy, but I'm not maxing out. I'm not doing anything that's going to potentially injure me for the most part. I mean, there's times when I want to send it in the gym, but I'm really, for the most part, doing at the lowest 4 or 5 reps of something because, again, I don't really care what my max is. I just want to be able to be strong and work my muscles in that sense. So I think the scheduling component is huge for that.
I've heard a couple of different approaches. So when I was working with a coach, he would have me do my leg days on the same days I did speed or long run, right? Because he was like, hey, you're already going to be spent. Go get your strength work in and keep your easy days easy. And I've seen both work for people really
but
well.
After the run.
So yeah. I would do speed day in the morning and then that was my leg day. And it wasn't always fun, right? I think I even saw some with the Lakers where they were lifting in the gym after games because they were like, hey, this is when you're already like that. We want your recovery days to be recovery and we want to increase that load. But so it's interesting because we've done some very similar things in the past. In fact, I think we used to do leg days on Mondays after a big weekend. And it sounds
I hated
like
it.
Right? Right. it sounds like that's worked pretty well for you. But one other thing too, I want to kind of detail, because again, a lot of times people are thinking like, oh, okay, great. Lift, legs, you know, they're thinking the standard, right? Squats, bench press, that type of stuff. But I've seen you do a lot of sliding plates with your legs, abduction, adduction, and you mentioned stabilizers and that. How important do you think that is, or when you work with people? Because I feel like that's a lot of the work that either people don't pay attention to, like don't realize is a big part of strength training, or it's the extras that it's like, as long as I get the basics. Do you see that as a critical part of your strength training, or are those little extras?
Yeah, critical, critical. I try to program in one day specifically for lower body mobility to work on these things, because I think that's really where you flesh out any weaknesses, because that's what you're looking for. On these days when you're doing heavy lifts, you're doing deadlifts or squats or something, you're not really able to identify your weaknesses because you're using your entire lower body and some of your upper body as well, and you're not able to focus in. So on those mobility days, I try to practice really listening to my body and getting zoned in and figuring out where any pain or inflammation or weaknesses are coming from, because pain is often weakness, right? And so if you're feeling any of that, something you can target a lot more easily and kind of proactively attack at that point.
Are there one, two, or three exercises that somebody listened that you would point people to and say, hey, go Google this or check it out on YouTube and start working these in?
I like to start with band work because it's humbling, right? It seems like it's easy. You see a lot of women in the gym with the bands and you just keep going and walk over to the dumbbells, right? And so when you get the bands working and you figure out some good ways to use them, it's really, really humbling. And they're a great way to identify some weaknesses. So I would say go look up some band workouts.
Yes, and bands will kick your butt pretty quick if you're not used to it. 100%. Find that weakness you're talking about. Well, let's press on, man. So Blackbeard's Revenge. We've talked about Blackbeard a few times on the show now. Had him on the Race Spotlight. We actually just had Diana Gorder on, who is the female winner for 2023. And so nice. Was only beat by two people, including yourself. But gosh, man. It sounds like going into it, you had some pretty big goals. We know from a time standpoint, 16 hours, 17 minutes, it's a 9:46 average pace. Yep. The question is, were you surprised by your time? Like, how did you feel about your result that day?
I was proud. I was not surprised. I was pissed off that I lost, but Lee won. He's a beast. I didn't really know about him. You know, I'm not somebody who goes and researches who's going to run the race before I get up to the starting line. So I didn't know anything about Lee. I still don't know a ton about him, but I know he's a beast and he usually wins that race. So I was chasing him all day. So that was a big part of that. But no, I was very proud, but I definitely was looking for the win the entire time.
So no surprise. We were talking about that beforehand and we were like, well, I don't know, man. He may have just gone in going for it. It sounds like that's the case, but huge accomplishment. There's only a handful of people that can have run a sub 17 hour 100. So for your first one, and for everybody listening, if you're not familiar with Blackbeard's, it is essentially a flat road type race through Outer Banks, right? So
point to point,
you know, put it in perspective, doesn't make it any less impressive, but there are people that will think, well, they picture a trail and think, how did that happen?
Okay. But for us average folk, right, we don't run that fast. What was it like to actually finish your first 100 miler?
Oh, the best feeling in the world. Best right? feeling in the world, man. And I'll tell you a little bit about. So I had a really bad knee issue about mile 73, mile 74. I was cruising up to this point. I mean, you know, you go through highs and lows through a race as anybody does. But I was working through those. But then I felt, you know, like a jolt, a lightning bolt go kind of through my knee. It was my IT band area. And I stop at that aid station at 74, 75. One of my buddies was pacing me from 50 to about 74, 75. My next buddy was picking me up at 74, 75. Chris, he was on my podcast last week. I stopped and I realized if I stop again, I might not be able to get going again because it was just that much pain. And so it was painful when I was running, but when I would stop and start again, that's when it was kind of crazy. So I looked at Chris and I was like, buddy, you got to buckle up because I'm not going to be able to stop the rest of the way. And if I do stop, I'm not going to be able to finish this thing. So we went from 74, 75. We ran the marathon basically without stopping the last quarter of the race. And I got to give it to Chris, man, because he would have to like run to the aid stations, fill up my waters for me, and then come back and hand them to me and all this. And he could go to the bathroom, couldn't do anything because if we stopped, I wasn't going to finish that race. So that actually was probably very helpful towards my final time ultimately. And at the end, I realized like if I was able to speed up a little bit, the pain was less. So the last 5 miles or so, and you guys know at that point in the race, you're like, I just want to get this thing over with. I'm just going to, you know, everything in the tank. So we were hitting like 8:30s, got down to 8:05, mile 95, 96, just trying to get the thing over with. So that is something else that really, really probably helped that time as well.
So I'm interested because obviously running that pace. So my first, like my brain, and I'm going to ask this in a second, but was nutrition. I was like, nutrition had to be on point, man. If you can run that last quarter, right, and do that. So I want to dig into that in a second, what your strategy was. But two, during that, did you ever hit like the major pain cave? Did you ever go, oh gosh, how do I keep going with this? Talk through it, because I'm seeing you nod your head. For everybody listening, you're nodding your head a little bit. But, and my guess is, as we talk about Yuari, there may be some different experience, but what were you feeling? What were you telling yourself when things got tough?
I think it's going in to the mindset already in the race of like, unless they're taking me out here on a stretcher, I'm finishing this race. And again, I realized like if I was going to stop, that I wasn't going to finish. So I didn't have any alternative at that point. And I was fortunate, man, because you guys have heard about Blackbeard. There's headwinds, there's wind, there's sand, everything's blowing in your face. And I had Chris, who's a 6'3", huge human, right in front of me. So I stuck in his back pocket and just cruised for the last 25 miles. I stared at his feet for 4 hours. And I had developed a mantra at that time that I was just repeating to myself. But I was deep, deep, deep in the pain cave for about 3-4 hours straight there, but just pushing through because I didn't give myself another option.
Like Kipchoge with the pace car, shielding the wind.
I hate when people tell me like that because I'm 6'5", so everybody does that to me. I'm like, this is stupid because I have to be the windshield.
Yeah, he probably didn't like it, but he didn't have a choice on that day.
It's impressive though, man, because, and I can put myself in the mindset of like, hey, early on it's do or die. But I've also been later in the race where I'm like, I just don't care anymore. Right. The do or die. Like, do I really care this much? It's cool to hear you talk about that and hear the conviction that you still, you know, had through there. But that said, I don't think that would have been possible, I'm guessing, without a decent hydration and nutrition strategy. So what did you do? How did you execute? And do you feel like you did it well?
Yeah, I will say my stomach was tore up the whole race. So I was dealing with stomach issues, which was really the biggest issue I dealt with that day. As far as my nutrition, everything, I didn't really even look at the aid stations because I knew what I had trained on and what my strategy was. And so I was fortunate to have a crew there of 6 or 7 people. My whole family was there because it was my first one. So they all wanted to come out and support. So they were coming and stopping at every aid station. And I would check in with the aid station, show them my number, but I'd go straight over to the vehicle. And I'm already in my head, know what I'm going to eat, what I'm going to put down, all that stuff. And I don't like to play any risky games on race day as far as what's at the aid stations and anything like that. So I had my plan dialed in. It's very simple, just my Uncrustables here and there, protein bar. I would try to eat something solid every probably hour and a half or so, and then just take my gels and do what I needed to do. Nothing crazy, but I just knew what I had trained on and what my body was comfortable with. So I didn't even really look at the aid station stuff.
When you say protein bar, how much protein?
I don't know. It's not like I was saying like I need to eat 20 grams of protein every couple hours. It was, again, it would go back to what went well for me when I was training, and it would be simple things like Nature Valley granola bars would sit really well with me, and then Uncrustables, of course, and some of these other things. And then, you know, as you know as well, like your body doesn't always want these things that you've had in the past, and your body's like, that's actually disgusting. I don't want anything to do with that right now. So I had plenty of variety of different things and just taking in what I could down at that time.
I appreciate all that, but there is something you said that has just gotten my antenna like through the roof here, because you said, I knew not to do anything risky on race day with my nutrition. That was your first 100. So how did you know?
Well, the coach, first of all, coach was like, even like 2 weeks out from race day, we're like, nothing new, you know, just because we don't want to do anything risky recovery wise or like anything. And that's something that I really practice is making sure all my Saturday long runs leading up to it, for like the 4 to 6 Saturdays leading up to race day, I try to do the exact same thing and make sure like I am dialed in and don't try to change anything up unless something's not working. Then of course you're going to change it up or whatever. But that was something she preached to me early on, was to train how you're going to race. And that was something I took into it. So that was credit to her on that one.
100%. And that's why I wanted to come back to it, because if you didn't have a coach, then that mantra of nothing new on race day, you may have read about it or something like that, but the execution of that is probably not as likely. And so when people are trying to figure out, do you need a coach or not? I don't think everybody needs a coach, but I think if you have a coach and they tell you something like that, you probably should listen, particularly if it's your first one, because you had no experience, but yet you knew something and it was cemented in your brain to the point that you executed it perfectly, which is very rare in somebody's first 100 miler to be able to execute their hydration nutrition perfectly unless they practiced it and somebody outside of themselves has reinforced it with them.
Yeah. Kudos to her for sure. Because even like a piece of pizza or something that could have derailed me, it just depends, because your stomach is just funny on race day. So that was something I was gung-ho about, is not even looking at what they had and not getting tempted by any of it, just because I wasn't sure that it would sit well with me.
Practice.
Yeah. That's the piece though, is practice, right? So nothing new on race day doesn't mean anything unless you've had intentional practice and
to know what you used. Nothing new means that you have used something during your practice the entire time.
So like even when we had Julie Chauvin, you know, in the nutrition episode, that's one thing she talked about, is like she gets her athletes to, hey, if you're doing an hour long run, some people are like, oh, I don't really need anything for hour long. It's like, no, take that hour and go test, right? Try different things. See how your body does on this, because it's having the practice that means something when you say don't do it on race day, right? Like you have to know what actually works. And in your case, you mentioned 4, 5, 6 hour runs. That's the time to really figure it out.
It's developing your palate and also the mindset of strategy and executing that strategy on race day. So again, I don't know who she is, but she did you well, man.
Yeah,
she did you real well.
Yeah. Well, last thing I'll say on that too is like, even on some of the shorter runs too, is I would eat before just to train the stomach and say, hey, this is what we do now. We eat before we run. Cause I ran fasted for the longest time leading up to before I was working with anybody. And I completely changed that. And now I rarely eat fasted anymore, just because for the ongoing reasoning and purpose of making sure my stomach is trained that way.
Reminds me of Jamison Collins. He ate like 4,000 calories of Thai food and then went running intentionally just as training for 200s.
I'm not doing all that.
But
yeah, but he's training for 200s all the time.
Yeah. But there was that intention, like, hey, let me see how my body behaves when I'm full, right? Hey, I want to get that feeling. So practice.
But not only are you a freak in that you did so well at a road course, but you decide you're going to flip the script and do it on a mountain as well. So why go run a mountain 100?
Because it scared me. It scared me a lot. I didn't want to be one of those people that was known as like a road racer, quote unquote. Even for hundreds, there's people who are like road 100 racers or whatever for flat distance. And even though I do prefer road, which is probably unique in ultra space, but I wanted to do something that totally, totally scared me. You are as close. It's in North Carolina here as well. So that was easy for me. It was like 1 hour 20 from my house here in Charlotte. But man, I knew it was a beast of a race, and it was totally different from the other 100 I had run earlier in that year. So I was like, if I want to be taken seriously in the ultra world, I got to take on some of these races like this and start building my resume with some impressive races and a large variety of races too.
Well, I'll just say this first. I have another question I'm going to get to in a minute, because you said about wanting to be taken seriously in the ultra running community. I want to come back to that, but you got first overall. You were only 1 of 6 runners to go sub 24 in that race. And it's been going on for 9 years. So it's not like it's a brand new race either. Your time on the event was 23 hours and 57 minutes. And when it comes to your prep for the race, like you said, you didn't want to be known as just a road race 100 mile runner, right? What'd you do differently?
I didn't do a whole lot differently. I did a lot more stair climber. Because in Charlotte, like, we have hills, but we don't have like trails, hills like that, mountains. We have Crowder's Mountain and stuff, which you can drive to. And so one of the key things that I did was go to Uari. I made the drive out and did, it's a 20 mile loop. So the race is 5 20-mile loops. So I did one of the 20 mile loops on a training run, and thank God I did, because I had these new Saucony Endorphin Rifts, which are trail shoes, but they were about a size too small, basically. And I tore my toe up. I mean, I was bleeding at the end of it. And that was one loop. My toe was bleeding. I had to literally go to the doctor that week and get it drained because it was in such bad shape. And that was 2 weeks. So I did that run on Saturday. in 2 more weeks was the race. So it was 2 weeks prior to the race. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to toe the line given how bad my toe is right now. Got it drained, got a new pair of shoes, got the Hoka Tecton X2s, switched over to that. Basically got a couple of road runs in with the Tecton X2s. And I was like, all right, I guess we're doing this, and sent it there. But really, I was just still very high mileage and I would do more stair climber. I got to get out on the trails that one time to get the experience. Thank God I did, because I would have taken those riffs on the race and actually destroyed myself. Probably would have DNF'd for sure. So that was huge. But I would say the biggest key was getting that experience beforehand and knowing what I was getting myself into for 5 of those loops.
Here's what's fascinating to me is because earlier you said, so we talked about in March, do your first 100. And then you go, okay, so now you got till October to prepare for a trail 100. But oh yeah, in July, you ran a 244 marathon. And you said earlier, you're like, yeah, that was a dedicated training block for that marathon. That was the first time it clicked. Like, I just assumed that, hey, you probably had from the base and everything that you were able to jump into the marathon and do that. But so now I'm kind of spinning my wheels going, okay, so if you were dedicated to a marathon, you really only had August, September, October to focus on Uari. And what I just heard, it sounds like you're taking your volume from your marathon and you're adding in stair climber, and that doesn't compute.
Well, it does, because his coach turned him from his base. I'm going to call it base, even though it was a marathon training, but you were doing a lot of interval work. And so he's doing a lot of VO2 max lactate threshold running to get to that Boston Marathon. Then coming out of the marathon, he's now moving into more of an endurance block and also race specificity. So he's now on the stair climber to get ready for the hills of Uari. And so it actually works really well from a ramping up his speed, then drop the intensity, increase the volume, and the specificity is kind of what his coach probably did with him.
Well, I actually programmed my own self, my own stuff for Uari. So I worked just solo because I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it with my own programming and training. So she worked with me leading up to the marathon, ran 244. And then the next 3 months was just kind of me and experimenting and being my own guinea pig through that process.
So we could say race specificity is on the stair climber, but we know from Uari, these are technical trails. Like you said, you saw them 2 weeks prior, right? So I say specific in terms of some elevation, yes, but in terms of the trails. And so now this is where my mind, I go back, because when I first like read through this, I was like, okay, this is where his strength background comes in. Because that makes sense to me as to why you would excel in Uari outside of just being a full-time trail runner, essentially.
1000%, because think about it, I have barely pretty much 0% trail experience. So what I was not ready for at Uari was the technicality of it. It was one of those courses where if you look up for 2 seconds, you're going to eat shit. And I certainly did a couple times. I went down a couple times on race day, but that was the part that I certainly wasn't ready for. I couldn't really train for to a certain extent. I probably could have gone to Whitewater Center, to some of these other local places a little bit more than what I did. I didn't slack on mileage, that's for sure. I just probably slacked on location and actually getting some of the more technical stuff done. So leading into it, that was my only concern, was the technicality of it. But I think that my, as you mentioned, the strength background, had I not had that, I would have crashed and burned and probably again DNF'd on Uari. But because I had that, it enabled me to push through and be able to work through some of those elevations and stuff I hadn't worked through in the past.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're both getting ready for the Cruel Jewel 50 in May, and that'll be my first kind of mountain technical experience. And I've really been falling back more on strength training, and I'm hoping that it pays off.
I'm going to die.
Yeah, I'm just counting that that's going to give me some of the benefit compared to races in the past. Really high volume and some of that stuff, I think, paid off very well. In this case,
I'm just hoping you'll slow down on climb on your back.
That's right. Hop on, man. Let's go. Okay, so I want to hear the details about Uari, but this is just curiosity because we said, man, and I think I saw a post. What was mentally harder, the 244 marathon or the Uari 100?
It's so difficult in their own ways. I have to say Uari for sure. So the marathon was downhill. So I got to put that out there. It was a net downhill course, which is a challenge in and of itself because it burns the quads, whatever, you have to train specifically kind of for that. But you are a man. I had two Pacers bail on me about a week or two before. So I was all set, ready to have Pacers from 60 on to zero Pacers for the whole thing. And so I got to meet, I kind of mentioned this earlier, my first 100, I met a different version of myself through the training and through that race. Got to meet an even further along version of myself at the end of that race, because I was pretty much, there's a 5 loops of 20 miles. Loop 4, I started slowing down. I was going through the pain cave. I was really in a bad spot mentally. And I remember mile 5, I knew that was where I was supposed to pick up a pacer. And I just kind of talked to myself. I picked up a mantra, and I don't even know where this came from, but I was like, all I need is all you got. All I need is all you got for that last 20 mile loop. I pounded 2 ketone IQs, and I just absolutely got after it from there. And the rest was history, but it was just so cool and so hard. And when you're able to accomplish things that are really fucking hard like that, you meet a different version of yourself, as I keep kind of saying. And that was probably one of the proudest moments of my life, was finishing that one and winning that one, because I didn't have the background and training to win that race, but I still was somehow able to do it. So I'm proud of that one for sure.
Was it the hardest thing you've ever done?
Yeah, that one was.
Yeah.
That one was. And that might change here in the next couple months, but that one is for now.
It may. When you first started reflecting on it, because you kind of looked up to the side and you said it was so cool and so hard. And he paused. Mm-hmm. I was like, it was the hardest thing he's ever done. And you love it about, like, you love the fact that you not only did like won it, right? But the fact that you finished it and finished it so well.
Yeah. And going into that race too, a little bit of it is naivete. I wanted to break the course record. Like, that's how I went into that race. And that's how I like to go into my race. Like, am I going to do it? Well, maybe not. But my mentality is I'm going to absolutely give it everything I have, see what happens. Realized probably towards the second or third loop that I wasn't going to break the course record. But I'm like, okay, you know, you always have your A, B, and C goals through your race. So I'm like, okay, let's go B goal, sub 24. Because I knew that was something that a bunch of people hadn't done. So kind of having those tertiary goals was important for me too. But yeah, man, now reflecting on it after you asked me that, that was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done.
Congratulations.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
I'm interested in two things. They're both mindset type questions. Mm-hmm. So the first thing, or one thing you just said was, hey, I went in to win it, or I went in to set the course record. One of the things that I think there's the flip side, like, one, yes, we can get the best out of ourselves by demanding so much of ourselves. The flip side is, and you kind of reference it, when that slips away or has the potential to slip away, it can be absolutely draining in terms of that push, that motivation. Sounds like you already kind of had that line. Did that become a struggle for you, or have you just trained yourself to, like, okay, focus on the next thing and keep pressing?
I'd like to say the latter, but it was the former, because that's where on that fourth loop, I just kind of hit a wall. Bad, because I realized I wasn't going to hit that goal that I initially set out for. But it was about reframing and resetting and realizing, hey, you can still do something pretty awesome today. You can win, but you can also do the sub 24. The other cool thing about that race is I had no idea how far behind me the guy in second was. So that was always constantly pushing me. And I didn't ask intentionally, because I didn't want to know, because I didn't want them to say, oh, he's 2 hours behind you. And so I could take it easy, because I still wanted to try and hit that sub 24. And if I would have asked, I probably would have let off the gas a little bit.
Did you ever consider quitting or want to quit?
No.
Okay. You seem like a guy who has developed a skill set of capturing thoughts and redirecting pretty quick. Obviously, ultras are a great place to spend a lot of times with dark sides of ourselves. And as I kind of, like, hear you talk and look, and you can tell me if I'm off, I'm guessing it's not just natural, but my guess is you've taken some time to work on that mindset so that when those thoughts come or when you meet that side of yourself, that it's like, okay, reframe, different playlist, whatever you want to call it. True, or is that just happened to be more of a natural side of you?
No, it's intentional for sure. I make sure, I literally tell myself to reframe and reset and try to gain a different perspective. Something I train for, like, I try to practice visualization a lot when I'm running. And when you do that, you kind of see yourself crossing the finish line and accomplishing these things. Obviously, it's never going to go the way you think it's going to go, but you also think about some of these alternative things are going to happen. and you know you're going to be able to work through it because you've already kind of worked through it in your mind. You've seen it happen 1,000 times over and over, or I do when I go through my training. So although there's times certainly where you're in the pain cave and you go through those 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 to 10 mile stretches where you're like, all hope seems lost. You get to the other side and you reframe and you reset and you keep on going.
You do a lot of positive self-talk.
Yeah.
You do.
A lot of it.
So speaking of positive self-talk, I'm guessing that also flows. We mentioned in the intro, you're a coach and you've got a podcast. Casually Ambitious is the name for both. How do those come about and what is your focus? Let's start with the podcast. How did that come about? What's the focus? Obviously, we know a little something about falling into that. Tell us the story there.
Yeah. So I'm trying to go back to the beginnings of it because really how it started was me just having conversations with people in Charlotte that I thought were interesting and just getting coffee with them. You know, like you reach out to these people and they have cool stories. And oftentimes they weren't athletes, they were entrepreneurs, people of influence, stuff like that. And then I was like, why am I not recording these conversations? So I would invite them over to my studio, and my other business is a video production company. So we have a little studio set up. So I'd have them come over and I'd just put the camera on. And if there was cool sound bites, we would clip it and we could use it for social content or whatever. And then I'm like, this is a podcast. Why am I not just calling it a podcast and recording it and giving it a name and all this? So we started the podcast. It initially started with me and my buddy, Zach Ryan. Initially, it was called Hybrid Human Podcast, and it has since transitioned, and I went solo, and it's transitioned to Casually Ambitious. But now I just, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be athletes or anything like that. I like to focus on athletes because that's what I'm interested in, and I like to hear some badass stories along those routes, but it's also entrepreneurs and just interesting folks. So it's kind of how that started.
How would you summarize the show itself? For somebody who's listening to our episode, they're like, hey, maybe I should check out this podcast. How would you summarize what they would experience in that? Like the goal of it?
The goal is selfishly for me to have conversations with people I find interesting and I think are badass individuals. But ultimately, it revolves around the pillars of health, wellness, and entrepreneurship, business. And these are the things that I find the most interesting. And I'm sure there's folks out there who resonate with that as well. And so if I find them interesting, I'm sure some of the listeners out there will do the same. But you guys probably, you wouldn't be doing this podcast if you didn't go crazy for it because you're just very interested in this type of conversation and the listenership follows suit. You don't really do anything strategically for any kind of listener. It's just you kind of get aligned with people who are very similar to you. And so it's cool with a podcast because you can be selfish in that way because there are going to be people with shared similar interests. So I can just go on and really ask what is interesting to me and other people will hopefully find some value in that.
Great. Now, just out of curiosity, we're not the most creative people. Our podcast is named The Ultra Running Guys. It's kind of obvious, right? Casually Ambitious is these two terms that are kind of dichotomous from one another, right? They're on polar opposites of the extreme, if you will. How do they marry together in your mind?
Yeah, I think that brand name, I've been sitting on that name for like 5 or 6 years. I never knew what it was going to be. And I just thought it was kind of a badass name. And it kind of reminded me of how I try to go about my daily life. And I'm an ambitious individual, but I'm also very low key and I'm an introvert. I keep to myself a lot, but I also have these huge, huge goals and I want to pursue them. So something about that contrast of like casually ambitious always resonated with me. I bought the domain, you know, a couple years ago and I was like, there's going to be a time. I don't know what it's going to be, but there's going to be a time. And so the podcast opportunity presented itself. I'm like, boom, casually ambitious. And then I started getting into, you know, with the coaching, I kind of gotten into a little bit with you guys, but it changed the trajectory of my life when I got a coach and I saw what that impact could have on myself. And how that training for that 100 literally changed my life. And I said, you know what? I want to be able to do that for other people as well, because that was such a profound thing that I came across in my life. And so for the coaching program, it just made sense too. I'm like, all right, let's build a brand around this thing. I got the domain name. The name was available on IG. Let's go. Game on.
So one, I'm going to give a plug for the podcast. I have listened to a couple of the episodes and anybody listening, if you're into mindset and personal development, like you said, you really dig into pretty much, if I had to sum it up, how awesome people become awesome, right? So highly recommend. I'm interested from the coaching standpoint. I really like what you just said about the impact on you and now being able to have, you know, the impact on other people. We were talking before, because a lot of times there's a segment that we get pretty excited about. And dude, you've got the endurance side, you've got speed. Like, what does your ideal coaching athlete look like? Is there a certain type that you're drawn to that you really just get passionate about?
Yeah, primarily the people I work with are usually not starting from zero. They have a base, they have an athletic background. But within the program, I have people that are currently training for 5Ks. I have people that are training for 100-mile races. So the variety is across the board. And I absolutely love that. I love being able to dial in on the specific person and figure out, okay, what is your goal? What is your flag in the ground? I always say flag in the ground because that's my most important thing. Like, if they come to me and say, I want to train, I'm like, okay, what are we training for? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, okay, let's get a race on the calendar, because we're going to find out what we're working towards and kind of reverse engineer and let the work fall into place from there. So, you know, my ideal person that I typically do work with is just, the brand name really nails it. Casually ambitious, like somebody who they're really, as I said, they have a background, a base, they're an athlete for the most part, but they want to level up in a sense. They want to see what their full athletic potential could be. And typically they want to do some form of hybrid training. I'm a big advocate of hybrid training, the strength plus the running and the high volume of running too. It's not just going out and running 10 miles a week. It's going out and saying, hey, we can lift heavy, but we can run 70, 80, 90 mile weeks too. So that's typically who I'm working with.
So if anybody's listening, they're like, yes, I want to connect. Casuallyambitious.com. Is that the best place in terms of that?
Yep. Or IG, you could just shoot me a message on IG at Chase Price.
Chase Price. So if you're listening, you know where to find them. We, though, before we go, we're getting a little bit short on time. Dude, you got some things coming up.
Mm-hmm.
None of them seem to be related, at least from the outside looking in.
Nope.
So Badwater Cape Fear 51 miler, Boston Marathon, well-earned. And so I'm sure that that's a bucket list race for a lot of people. And then mm-hmm. the Hellbender 100 in May. I know Jeff's got a burning question.
It is burning. And speaking of burning, I'm going to make a big assumption. So talk to me about the Badwater Cape Fear. It's a great race. We know Chris Kosman personally. I have volunteered at his race multiple times out on the island. It's about 30 minutes away from us where we live. It is a great race. You're doing the 51 miler. And there is a bonus for somebody who wins that race. Are you aware of what they get if they win it?
I think I know, and it could be one of the reasons why I'm so fired up for this race.
Literally because, fired up.
Yep, because there's my dream race is maybe on the other side of it. So Badwater 135 is my dream race. That's my number one that I want to accomplish and I want to get into and run one day. And so this is a way for me to get on the radar, meet Chris, and kind of put my name out there and hopefully go out there and crush it in a couple weeks here.
It's one of those things, I told you so, but you knew this too. So that was our guess. We're like, when I looked at the calendar, I thought, okay, this dude is fast. And if he is as driven as we think he's going to be, this is probably the underlying reason he's running this race. And if he's looking to win it, that is why he's running it. So it's a great race and yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
The other reason that I'm kind of using it as hopefully a stepping stool is because I am fairly new to the game. And so for Badwater, they have these qualifications and you have to be ultra running for like at least 3 or 4 years. You have to have all these pre-qualifiers. And I'm like, man, I'm trying. I'm going as fast as I can. But if I can speed that process up a little bit, I'm going to try and do it. So that's kind of in there too.
Top male, top female,
automatic entry.
So, and we were talking about that. It's like, you know, if you're fast, you go for a golden ticket race for Western States, but you also recognize that other fast people go for golden ticket races. So
yeah,
although this, I do think this one's probably a little bit different. How many people run this?
There's going to be a couple hundred people that run the 50 miler. It's a great race. There will be a few. I'm not sure who signed up this year. There are people who will run it fast some years. Other years, there's not. It just depends on what's going on. I don't need to debrief the entire race. I've been out there way too many times. But just like Blackbeards, you're going to be dealing with a headwind more than likely. And the winds are pretty gusty out there. And so I think you're going to have a great time on the island. It's a very good race. It's unfortunately my daughter's birthday weekend. And so I probably won't be able to be there, though Chris is asking me to show up in the middle of the island. So if I am there, you will see me in the middle of the island rooting you on.
Let's go. I hope you are. I do have a question about it. So I know that it's a lot of sand, running on the sand and everything. About what percentage of the race is on the sand?
So the first 12 miles is going to be on a basically a cart path along the island. Okay. And then around mile 12, you're going to have a 1 mile run through a maritime forest, which is pretty technical. It's a lot of turning. It's just, but, and you got to pay attention where you're going. And at that point, you get to the last aid station on the island, and then you're off to the beach. And then you've got 9 miles one direction, 9 miles back. It's like 9.5 miles. And then you turn around at that aid station and do it again for the 51 miler. And you ended. So you are going to have 12 miles on cart path, 1 mile on maritime forest, technical trail, 38 miles on sand.
Angled sand, right?
Angled sand.
Yeah. I like that.
Yep.
I'm ready for that.
And when high tide comes in, you're in the soft sand.
Everybody's favorite.
So I recommend making one shoe bigger than the other and just run like that for a while and then swap them out.
Yeah, I keep trying to think about what shoe I'm going to wear. I think I'm still going to wear the Hoka Tectons. I think they'll be fine for that because they're able to go on road a little bit too. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I haven't been out there, but, and I haven't worn the Tectons. But if you can run on road, I would think, because you got one part of technical. Otherwise, it's pretty much a road shoe, right?
I mean, you don't want to have any shoe that's going to pick up sand either. So like you're going to run on the flatter sand, which is going to be wet sand, right? That, because that's flatter. And so you have better traction there. But if it's wet and you've got cleats, are you going to be picking up sand and locking it? That'd be a mistake, right? Because you don't want to have heavier feet. And so a lot of people are going to wear like road shoes or whatever, but it begins to be a traction issue when you get into the deep sand at the end of the island stuff, because as you're coming out on each side, you go through some almost dune-like sand in spots. And so it's thick and heavy. But again, having a shoe with traction, it's really not going to help you in that environment because you're not trying to grip the ground here. You're trying to actually be on top of the ground as much as possible.
Fair enough. I'm loading up the carbon fibers then.
Yeah, there you go. But how, I mean, you may ruin them in the salt, but that's beside the point. But if you win, it's still good. You're a bad water.
Worth it.
It is a great, are you going to stay on the island?
Yep. We're staying on the island. My wife's coming. My mother and father-in-law are coming. So it's going to be a good time.
That's awesome.
Super cool race. We've had Chris Kosman on twice, once just to talk about really all the races. We talked about Cape Fear a little bit, and then we had him on specifically for Salton Sea. Just a great guy. I'm excited for you to meet him, and it was going to be really fun to track you that day. So let me ask this, though, because three big races. If I had to guess, I would say that's your A race out of the three, but only because of what stands on the other side of it. What do you think?
Boston.
Is it really?
It's got to be Boston. Yeah. And it's funny because I'm literally an ultra guy. I'm on the Ultra Running Guys podcast, but it's Boston because Boston is just as new as I am to running to be able to hit such a historic, I mean, really the ultimate epitome of marathon running. I want to try and hit 240 in Boston is going to be my goal. So I've been training for that since Jan 1, and that's kind of my A right now. I totally understand the implications of the other ones, and I'm very, very excited, and it's not going to take away from any training for those, but Boston's kind of my A right now.
It's so funny, because
Chris is going to be disappointed.
I know.
If no. I ever make it into Boston, I will probably run my slowest marathon, because I just want to like soak it in and look around.
But, yeah, I thought about that for a while, but then I was like, nope, that's not in my nature.
Plus, I mean, you already earned your way into Boston, and everybody there's going to be fast. So, you know,
I know. That's the sad part.
It's going to be interesting because he says his goal is to either podium or win.
I know. So, I was going to say, so, you know, you only got to knock another half an hour off of your
easy dude.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll probably come in like 4,000th, 5,000th place. So we'll see.
Crazy.
Okay. So we got Badwater Cape Fear, Boston. If Boston's the A race, Hellbender 100 is 1 month after Boston. So it sounds like a similar kind of situation where you're going to come right off of marathon training and then just do what you got to do for Hellbender, which is a good mountain race.
It's going to be another whole level of pain.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah.
What attracted you to that one?
Pain. That one just attracted him to pain.
For sure. I mean, it's local, which helps my cause. And I had to find something that was, you know, working with the schedule right after Boston. I wish I could have had a little bit more time to build for that, but it is what it is. I'll have a really solid base. I mean, the VO2 max is going to be right where we want it. I just haven't necessarily done the elevation and that sort of in the distance training too. So it's going to be interesting. I'm going to probably start cranking my mileage up. So right now I'm at about 80. I'm 70 to 80, and probably going to crank up to 80, 90, 100 in the next couple weeks. It's tough. It's tough to have like all three different ones, but that's why I'm doing it, because it's a badass challenge. And all three of these races excite me in three totally, totally different ways. And so I'm fired up about that.
Well, and I think we've already talked about, right, just with the training, your background, and there's probably a lot of people that pay attention to the Nick Bears and the different type of hybrid and what you're able to do in terms of a variety of types of events. And so it sounds like you're in a pretty good spot to be able to make that swap compared to the average runner. So that's huge, man.
Hope so.
I just hope I see him on the 23rd of March to welcome him, welcome him officially to the Badwater family, and his entire view changes.
Yeah. We'll see. I hope so.
Well, no matter what, dude, we're super excited to follow along for those three races. This has been a really, really fun conversation. And I think, you know, several times, and I mentioned it once, but the just show up concept, like, I feel like that's something you incorporate both from your mindset, how you talk about, you know, changing from the visualization, reframing those types of things, just show up mentally, as well as don't negotiate, go out and do the thing, right? Mm-hmm. For everybody listening, thanks so much for plugging in. This was massive value add. And we already mentioned it, but it's at Chase Price or casuallyambitious.com. Go check out everything that Chase is doing. Man, you've got a great followership. You put out a lot of content. So for nothing else, you know, go do that. But we want to make sure we're cheering you along. Chase, dude, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Thank you guys. It was a true pleasure. I can't wait to hopefully see you on the island the 23rd. If not, I'm sure I'll see you guys at a race soon and get to shake your hand in person.
Fantastic. Can't wait for that. We're going to keep you around for just a few minutes so we can do something fun for Patreon. Everybody else listening, normal ask. If you're finding the value, share, tell your friends, give us the like, hit the button, and we will talk soon.
Cut.
Cut.
Look, he's already here.
Gentlemen, what's going on?
What's up, dude? And I like the
big old mic and everything.
I was going to say, it brings a nice mic. That's the kind of guest we want.
Freaking amateurs is what we are.
Hey, look, man, you can't judge me. One, it's late. Two, I'm getting wild.
It's late.
It's early and you're just now getting started. Just getting started.
Hey, you guys picked the 8 p.m., so I'm just rolling with it.
You know what's great is he's not nervous.
I know. It's what he does. Right? He's got a fancy microphone. You never get nervous when you got the fancy microphone.
Some get. Well, we have a fancy microphone. It's just not.
Oh, it's there. I see it.
Hey, JLab to the store.
And everybody asked me about those headphones. They're like, why were you running an Ultra with those big-ass headphones on? And honestly, I'm asking myself the same thing looking at those pictures. But It hyped me up in the moment. I just reread How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I try to read it once a year. Probably my favorite book of all time.
Are we friends?
I'd say so. We're getting there.
I'm not influenced yet. Sorry.
I'm just excited that I don't have to host one. I'm used to just hosting them all and having the questions ready. So flipping it over to you guys this time.
No, that's actually what this is. Yeah, this is our show is all about
you.
We make ourselves guests on everybody else's show.
Boom. It's going to be awkward. I promise you.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.